Good morning, early birds. You've got The Worm, a podcast from Yellowstone Public Radio, rounding up reporting from our newsroom and Montana Public Radio. Today we have stories about an online art exhibit expressing how people are feeling during the pandemic, women in agriculture, and testing for coronavirus. It's Friday, April 24th. I'm your host, Jess Sheldahl. Environmental groups allege a southwestern Montana water district is illegally polluting the West Fork of the Gallatin River. Kayla DeRoche reports.
On Wednesday, the group sent a 60-day notice of intent to sue the Big Sky County Water and Sewer Districts for violation of the Federal Clean Water Act. The Cottonwood Environmental Law Center, Gallatin Wildlife Association, and Montana Rivers wrote in their letter that a wastewater pond near the Big Sky Ski Resort is leaking pollutants without a permit into the Gallatin River. Lawyer John Meyer with the Cottonwood Environmental Law Center says the filing doesn't necessarily mean the groups will sue.
It's kind of like a 60-day ceasefire so that we can talk about what's going on.
He says the Cottonwood Environmental Law Center ran tests and found high levels of nitrogen and chloride in the alleged leak, which he says could produce excessive amounts of algae in the Gallatin and harm the fish there. YPR reached out to the Big Sky County Water and Sewer District, which said it had not yet received the letter and could not comment. Kayla DeRoche, Yellowstone Public Radio News.
Montana is reporting 442 lab-confirmed cases of the novel coronavirus, with three added from Wednesday's batch of tests. The number of known cases in Montana may be higher, as some counties are now counting epi-linked cases. These are presumed COVID-19 patients who haven't been tested but who show all symptoms and have close contact with a lab-confirmed case. 13 people are currently hospitalized, 14 have died, 306 have recovered. Montana financial leaders are encouraging business owners to get their ducks in a row as more funding for the federal Paycheck Protection Program was approved by Congress yesterday. Rachel Kramer reports.
Tracy Kenyon, president and CEO of Montana's credit unions, says small businesses as well as nonprofit organizations and co-ops will likely get a second chance to receive forgivable loans to pay employees.
Now is a good time to check in with your credit union, your bank, and find out about the next phase of funding and kind of get your paperwork ready to go.
Some financial experts predict the new funding could run out in a day or two. The Paycheck Protection Program, through one of the federal coronavirus relief packages, ran out of its nearly $350 billion in less than 2 weeks. The U.S. Small Business Administration reported more than 1.6 million loan applications had been approved nationwide by last Thursday. Montana ended up with nearly 13,500 loans, totaling almost $1.5 billion. Congress approved an additional $300 billion for the program Thursday.
Probably a huge number of businesses that were not able to get in before the funding ran out will get funding. I know that my credit union have a pipeline of loans waiting for the funding. So I expect that those funds will be exhausted fairly quickly.
She says people should call their financial institution or check the Montana Credit Union website to find out which ones participate in the program. The Montana Credit Union, the Montana Division of the Small Business Administration, and the Montana Independent Bankers Association are putting together reports with more data on loan approvals. They'll be presenting the findings next week during the hearing with the Economic Affairs Interim Committee of the Montana Legislature. With Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Rachel Kramer.
How are Montanans handling the coronavirus pandemic? Billings Western Heritage Center's online exhibit will show just how we're feeling. Kay Erickson reports the show goes live today.
It's called Art in Isolation, Response to COVID-19. Lauren Hunley with the Western Heritage Center says the exhibit has nearly 170 unique and original pieces of art by Montanans, expressing such emotions as anger, gratitude, humor, and spirituality during the coronavirus pandemic.
This is a really emotional time, and people are using art to process and express those emotions.
The exhibit is divided into six sections, which include embroidery, quilts, sculptures, sketches, and music. One photo is a black and white picture of a birthday cake by Heidi Overgaard. It represents how her daughter spent her 15th birthday, a party of three, her mom, brother, and the birthday girl.
Sometimes I'll just get an idea and snap a shot.
There's poetry, including a poem by 12-year-old Sage McKnight.
I miss school. At first you're excited and it is great. Then your happiness turns into hate. In the beginning there are things to do. Then boredom chokes you until you're blue. Too cold to go outside. The problem is worldwide. In the house alone with nobody to talk to, you wish you were back at school with your crew.
Exhibit organizer Lauren Hunley says this free-to-view online exhibit is a way of documenting an historic time.
Understanding that we're living in historic times, how do we document and track what's happening? How do we continue to be relevant for our community? How do we be a community space when people aren't allowed to gather in community spaces?
Art in Isolation will be available on the Western Heritage Center's website starting Friday, April 24th through December. Kay Erickson, Yellowstone Public Radio News.
County health officers in Montana say residents must continue social distancing measures, even as the state-mandated stay-at-home order lifts Sunday in order to avoid future outbreaks of the COVID-19 illness caused by the novel coronavirus. Nikki Ouellette reports.
Many counties are aligning local business closure orders to the governor's phased reopening plan, but health officers say people still need to social distance, wash hands often, and stay home if they're sick. Missoula City County Health Officer Cindy Farr, in a daily briefing video Thursday, said she expects a bump of new cases as people emerge from the stay-at-home order.
And there's no evidence that we've hit the peak or that the worst of this is over.
She says the county's public health department is still evaluating Governor Steve Bullock's reopening plan to see if other local guidance is needed to protect the public and healthcare workers.
We did not open things up. Rescinding the stay-at-home directive was not a local decision. And as we've mentioned before, we've been under the governor's orders for several weeks now and not local directives. So those of you who are frustrated or confused by this, we totally understand, again, that we are assessing things and trying to figure out what makes the most sense for our community.
Gallatin County Health Officer Matt Kelly said he assumed the state's plan would have given a week's notice ahead of reopening, but that didn't happen. The Bozeman Daily Chronicle reports some members of the county's health board said their vote Thursday to align the county's business closures with the state are not, quote, in the best interest of public health, end quote. Yellowstone County Health Officer John Felton says a new local closure order could be triggered if there's a rise in new respiratory illnesses, a shortage of personal protective equipment or testing materials, stress to the county's healthcare facilities, or people not adhering to social distancing. He says he's paying particular attention to vulnerable populations at long-term care facilities and shelters, and he's monitoring the needs of nearby communities that rely on Billings two hospitals for healthcare.
It's important to remember that in Billings, we are a regional healthcare hub for a population of over 650,000 people. Surrounding states have not taken the same measures that Montana has, and so we need to be aware of what's going on, not only in our community, but in our entire service area.
While state-mandated public health directives lift for individuals Sunday, county health officers like Felton say residents must continue to follow the directive's guidance. Stay home if you're ill, stay 6 feet away from others, and consider wearing a face mask if you're out in public.
Failure to follow these recommendations will likely mean more sick people, increased demands on our stressed health care and social service systems, and ultimately more families burying their loved ones. But if we all take these actions, collectively we can make a difference.
In Billings, I'm Nikki Ouellette.
Ranching can be an isolating profession in a good year, but the coronavirus pandemic has disrupted the few staples of social contact women ranchers rely on. Rachel Kramer reports a program led by a woman in Garfield County, Montana, is forging new ways of connecting that will likely outlast the pandemic.
Amber Smith and her family ranch on 53,000 acres in eastern Montana. When social distancing went into effect last month, Smith says,
I had someone reach out to me and say, you're so used to this, it's probably no big deal.
She says in some ways that's true, but the isolation caused by the pandemic is still very different. Special community events Smith and her family had been looking forward to, like an Easter sunrise church service, an annual potluck in Cohagen, and plans to see relatives, were canceled. So were the in-person summer retreats Smith had been planning as the Women in Ranching Program Manager for the nonprofit Western Landowners Alliance. Normally, the program facilitates two-day gatherings, or circles, on ranches in Montana, New Mexico, and California to connect women ranchers, build leadership skills, and set personal and professional goals. Smith reached out to her network mid-March to see if they'd want to meet virtually for weekly check-ins and facilitated discussions.
Which was really just me saying, I have no idea if anyone's going to be interested. Let's just see if anyone shows up. And I was prepared to talk to myself for an hour, but six women showed up.
Smith says it has grown to 20 with different women joining each week. She says it's ironic they're going virtual this year because funders have suggested it as an easier and less expensive format.
I've always been very against that because, again, these are women who never go anywhere. Like they are on their ranches working really hard. And so if once a year I can pull them away, there's so much transformation right at your fingertips.
Finding mentors and a sense of belonging can be a challenge for anyone. Smith says young female ranchers often face added scrutiny and isolation. She says there are more opportunities for growth when you're out of your daily experience, but this isn't a normal year, and in some ways it's going to help the young program in the long term. Chia Thrain is one of the women in ranching participants. She runs a herd of goats for meat, milk, fiber, invasive weed control, and land regeneration with her family near Red Lodge. Thrain says the weekly virtual gatherings aren't as deep and immersive as the annual two-day circles, but
I think it carries a little bit of that sense of trust and camaraderie that we've built by being intimate together and allows us to kind of be accountable to each other on a more regular basis, which I like.
Amber Smith says Women in Ranching will continue the weekly gatherings even when the pandemic subsides. April Martin is an enrolled member of the Northern Cheyenne Tribe, a rancher, and the executive director of the Wild Rose Center in Busby, Montana. Martin says Wild Rose started as a women's retreat center and has expanded to include community programs ranging from learning how to make cheese to dealing with grief. Last year, the Wild Rose Center hosted one of the Women in Ranching circles.
Well, it was really amazing for us to have a diverse group of people, all ages, all professional backgrounds, doing amazing work here on our land, on the Northern Cheyenne Reservation, and just talking about, you know, how we impact the land.
She says the reservation has identified nearly 100 different plants with traditional medicinal value.
We didn't really have time to go out on the land and look at them, but just knowing that on your land you have these plants that have more value than just forage was really interesting for a lot of the people.
Martin says she had been planning a horseback ride with a Northern Cheyenne ethnobotanist at the next circle in September. She's working with program manager Amber Smith to figure out what a virtual format might look like. Smith says virtual or face-to-face, Women in Ranching is a catalyst for growth. She's seen participants become business partners, go on to buy ranches, write books, and just come into their own.
Being heard, appreciated, and understood for exactly who you are at that moment, and having a group of people who fully believes in your capacity and fully embraces the skills that you bring to the table in agriculture is huge.
Smith says 2020 will be the year to scale up the program's facilitators, develop virtual education models, and create a mentorship program. With Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Rachel Kramer.
As Montana begins lifting stay-at-home and business closure orders this weekend, state officials say they're closely monitoring new cases of the COVID-19 illness. But the state is not tracking county-level testing rates. Public health experts say this is a gap that makes it harder to know if it's the right time to loosen controls. Catherine Houghton of the Bozeman Daily Chronicle worked with a team of reporters, including from Yellowstone Public Radio, Montana Public Radio, Montana Free Press, and Lee Enterprises, to discover what testing data is available from each of Montana's 56 counties. She speaks about her reporting with Nikki Willette.
Catherine, thanks so much for sharing your reporting with us.
Thanks for having me.
The state administration says its decisions about reopening Montana's economy will be driven by data and science. What data specifically is the state looking at?
The state's looking at confirmed positive tests and hospitalizations. The state lab also knows how many samples it runs, but it doesn't always know about samples run at commercial or clinical labs.
So the state is not tracking the number of tests that are coming in from each county. Is that problematic?
It depends on who you ask. The state has said the main thing is investigating these positive cases, trying to figure out how somebody contracted the illness and who else could be infected. State officials say they're tracking this disease well, and if there were any major gaps, they would recognize that. If people were hospitalized with COVID-19 that public health officials hadn't known about before that point. But I also spoke with two public health experts outside of Montana. Dr. Nadia Abuelazam, an epidemiologist with Boston College, said there's not a great standard in the U.S. yet to track COVID-19 in populations. She said if testing capacity is limited, then it makes sense for Montana to focus on lab-confirmed positives and hospitalizations like it's doing. But she said either the state has few enough cases that its strategy is okay, or there are a lot of cases that we don't know about. And she said either way, the state doesn't have enough information to know which lane it falls into. The state lab has said it has what it needs to do the testing it wants, but that could change daily based on the supplies needed to test, like swabs or vials, to transport samples, though each hospital has a different stock of supply.
So do counties then have a strong sense of how testing is playing out within their communities?
That depends, and it seems to vary a lot from one place to the next. So COVID-19 is a reportable disease, and health departments are at the lead of understanding this disease in their communities. And from what I've heard from public health nurses who do these contact tracing investigations and from county public health officers, the process is going well. Our team spoke with county health officials and public health nurses in all 56 counties. Many rural counties said it's likely some of their residents traveled elsewhere for care and got tested in another place. They don't always hear back if those tests show up as a negative, though they do hear about the positives. That means they often don't know how many of their residents have been tested. Some hospitals send tests to commercial labs they have relationships with. Those numbers are sometimes communicated back to the state, but we're not sure how many aren't. The state has said that 18 labs reported about 2,500 tests.
I've seen posts on social media and kind of heard anecdotally that some people, especially early on, they had the same symptoms of COVID-19, like a fever or cough or aches, but they weren't tested. And some say their names weren't even taken. Is anyone tracking the number of people who've been denied testing?
Not that we could find. In the beginning of this, the CDC's guidelines on testing changed a lot, sometimes by day. Initially, the tests were held for people who had recently traveled internationally. And now there's a list of symptoms that doctors are looking to decide whether or not a patient is going to get tested. And it doesn't matter where that patient comes from. Meanwhile, people rejected for a test one week who may have qualified the next were never followed up with, from what we've heard. But again, what information health officials are collecting varies. Some counties in eastern Montana, for example, are keeping spreadsheets of people in quarantine because they've just returned from out-of-state travel.
Interesting. We know that testing for COVID-19 doesn't really affect the individual patient. Their provider is going to treat their symptoms regardless of whether they have a test or not. But the testing does give epidemiologists some valuable information about how the virus might be spreading. And as we start lifting restrictions and people start hanging out again, are we in a place where we know where the virus was and where it wasn't?
So that's a really hard question to answer. Some counties hadn't tested a single person as of April 8th, when we polled all the counties in Montana. That was the case in Golden, Treasure, and Petroleum counties. Some had tested a lot of people and found a lot of cases, like Gallatin, Yellowstone, Missoula, and Flathead counties. We sometimes heard there's also a challenge in some smaller communities around privacy. People don't want their neighbors knowing they got tested, so they'll go to another county. Like I said, there isn't a national strategy for how best to trace this illness. A lot is changing fast when it comes to understanding and reporting this disease. The state says it's confident in its testing capturing the big picture of how this is playing out. But we'll have to see how things unfold the next couple of weeks, though both public health experts and state officials say we should expect to see more cases as people come out of the stay-at-home order Sunday. That's likely part of the reality until there's a vaccine for this.
Indeed. Well, Catherine, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you.
That was Catherine Houghton of the Bozeman Daily Chronicle recapping her team's reporting on COVID-19 testing by county in Montana. That full report is on our website, ypradio.org. And that's what's happening in Montana today. Check in with Montana Public Radio's Montana Evening News for updates on the news of the day. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Jess Sheldahl. We'll have another episode of The Worm for you early birds Monday morning.
The Worm is produced by Jess Sheldahl for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Meadowlark Call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. Partial funding for The Worm is provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montana. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.